Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. It is Tuesday, the 30th of December, as we say in the States, and it's a delight to have you with us. Joining me for the discussion, WAMC, is Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Joe.
And political consultant Libby Post joins us this morning as well.
Hello, darling.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Libby's my savior.
Yeah. Well, that was last week, honey. This week, I'm like, the new baby or something?
Yeah, well,
it's the Feast of the Circumcision on Thursday.
It's the Feast of the Circumcision?
That's what they used to call it, yeah.
Call what?
January 1st.
Really?
It was when Jesus was brought for the circumcision.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, his bris. It's the Feast of his bris.
Right.
Dear, right. Alan's just looking at me like, are
wow.
you kidding?
Wow, we got to that.
That
in,
was like,
we got to that,
that
in
was
40
cool.
seconds.
No, that was really cool. My mouth
nice,
is open. Yeah.
Nice move, Mike. Good for you. All right. Here's how you can join us in the panel. All you have to do is write to us, roundtable at WAMC.org, or go to WAMC.org/roundtable. Which will be the new way to do this, so listen up. There will be a post titled 12/30/14. Just click on that, and that's how we'll be taking your comments. WAMC.org/roundtable. Let's start with the big news, the state news, what is Sheldon Silver up to? Federal authorities are investigating substantial payments made to the state assembly speaker Sheldon Silver by a small law firm that seeks real estate tax reductions for commercial and residential properties in New York City, according to people with knowledge of the matter. Prosecutors from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York and agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation have found the law firm Goldberg and Uriyami, is that correct?
That sounds right, yeah, something like that.
PC has paid Mr. Silver the sums over roughly a decade, but that he did not list that income on his annual financial disclosure forms as required, according to the people with access to this information, of knowledge of the matter, as the New York Times says. The prosecutors from the office of U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, remember that name, and the FBI agents were seeking to determine precisely what Mr. Silver, a Manhattan Democrat, has been doing for the payments, the people said. Spokesman for the FBI and Mr. Bharara's office declined to comment.
Well, Mike, you're really close to this in that you're the associate editor of the Times Union. It's probably the best source for state news around. But what I can't glean from the New York Times article or the article you ran today is whether not putting your outside income is not only violative of the rules, but also violative of the law. In other words, is this something one could be arrested for and thrown into the clink for?
Well, I should say that the Times Union ran the New York Times story because we are we subscribe to the New York Times news service and have license to do that. So I only know what I read in the Times today about this particular case. But yeah, the whole issue of how legislators make money on the side, basically part-time work by outside work by legislators, has been the subject of various ethics investigations. The Moreland Act Commission, which was commissioned back in 2013 by Governor Cuomo to look into legislative ethics issues, was looking closely at ways to make legislators more accountable and to identify potential conflicts of interest. That, of course, was abruptly stopped earlier this year by the governor. The commission was basically decommissioned. And that's when Preet Bharara sent a truckload over to the Moreland Act Commission's office and picked up all their files and picked up the investigation. And that is evidently what he is focusing on, this whole notion of what a legislator can do on the side and where the boundaries are, because it has been fuzzy in Albany, as you know.
So I don't want to riff on this too much, but it is still one of the classic mistakes that Andrew Cuomo made. It was a terrible error. Well, it may not have been an error. It may have been self-preservation. But in the middle, when they're doing things like getting this information you're talking about, Mike, you announce to the state, well, you know, they put a half-baked ethics law in that means nothing, and so therefore I'm cutting down, I'm killing this commission, which was supposed to find things like what you're talking about.
Well, the governor contended that the commission had achieved what he wanted. It forced some compromises with the legislature. It added some enforcement at the State Board of Elections. You know, campaign financing is a big problem. And that was suitable, and the commission was no longer needed, obviously.
It was an outrage, in my opinion, it was an outrageous thing for him to do. They were bringing home the bacon, precisely what you're talking about, Mike here. And now we see him, the same governor, even though both legislatures in New Jersey and New York, and we've talked about this, passed a reconfiguration of the Port Authority because it is filled with patronage and everything else, and both governors of both states vetoed. Now, my point is, these are not smart decisions on this governor's part. I don't get it. I don't get why he risks everything by making these non-astute, because we all know that he's a brilliant tactician. So I don't get this.
I don't get it either. I mean, but it's like if you connect the dots, you know, there's this game of how can we look like we're being ethical without being ethical?
Yes, that's right.
It's really very funny and sad, actually. But, you know, you've got Moreland. That's now he closed it down. But Brar is doing his thing and is now exposing folks like Libous and Shelley Silver and others. And you have what they did yesterday with the Port Authority, you know. I'm now really starting to seriously reconsider support of term limits. But I know that election law is not going to change in this state because it's there to protect the incumbent. And until there's wholesale reform, this sort of stuff is going to, I don't want to see blood in the streets. But
no, I don't mean it that way.
I mean
political revolution.
Sure. This sort of stuff is going to continue to go on because it protects those in power. And that's what it's all about. And it'll be interesting to see if Shelley, if anything happens to Shelley.
Well, Sheldon Silver fronts, obviously, for the members.
Right.
They can say, oh, no, we don't want a pay raise. And he fights for their pay raise. That's a pretty good example of the way that it works.
And they will rally around.
Yes. And they always have.
So let me ask this question. Here's a guy, Shelley Silver, who has been under a question for some dealings in the past.
Yes, and seems to have escaped any...
Well, exactly. So there's that scene in The Matrix where, you know...
He just
goes back and the bullet goes right over your head. And he seems to have dodged many bullets over the years, political bullets.
Amazing political resilience.
Right. Yes. The Teflon. As Reagan was called so many years ago. So is this stronger coming from the feds? Is it... and given, you know, at some point, because of the repetition of these allegations, that eventually it will hurt?
Yeah, well, there's an old saying that if the feds want you, the feds get you.
Unless your name's Joe Bruno.
Yeah.
Right. There is that.
But that poor guy
took a
toll on him during this time.
Which poor guy?
Joe Bruno.
Oh. Okay.
Well, it did. The federal investigation of Joe Bruno, which he ultimately was exonerated, did force him to leave office.
And it
took a toll on him.
Yeah.
You know, that's another issue. But Shelley Silver has been able to duck other investigations.
Yes,
is this
going to
be something he cannot duck?
Here's the question. It isn't that he didn't report it, which is bad enough. The question is, did anybody get anything for giving him this money?
Right.
Because if they can prove that, then they have a real serious allegation. That's what people go to jail for.
Well, Quid pro quo.
Right. They have to connect the dots between Shelley and tax abatements in the city, in his district. Mm-hmm. And that goes to City Hall.
One of which
Hall.
Went to his building.
Right. And that goes to City Hall under many different mayors, mostly Mike Bloomberg and whoever was there before him.
Well, there's a lot of horse trading that goes on in politics. You know, one person helps another person. And so if one says, well, it's an executive function, therefore he doesn't have anything to say about it, they'd be right.
What's interesting to me is that it was also firms, real estate firms, that were getting large tax abatements that were being looked into by the Moreland Act Commission. And according to the story that was broken by the Daily News, Ken Lovett, several months ago, that the New York Times has really picked up on and kind of made their own story. And this is sort of an outcome of their investigation. That was involving that alleged that the governor's office, the second floor, basically told the Moreland Act Commission, stop looking at that.
Stop looking at the real estate people, right, many of whom had given much money
to the $45 million
that Cuomo had in his campaign.
This seems to be where the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, and the FBI is focusing their investigation, at least according to this story in the New York Times.
Stop looking at the purple polka-dotted elephant in the middle of the room.
Right.
Okay.
Look at that high rise instead.
We'll take a break. We'll be back. We welcome your comments. WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back after this.
Support comes from Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York. Dr. Susan Boja and Cara Bador providing comprehensive hearing and hearing aid services. HearingBest.com. Terrapin Restaurant Rhinebeck celebrating New Year's Eve with a prefix dinner featuring local organic ingredients. TerrapinRestaurant.com for reservations. And Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York, offering custom framing and new exhibits every first Friday. Open Monday through Saturday, 518-915-1956.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable, and we thank you very much for being with us this morning. We welcome you to join us, roundtable at WAMC.org, or go to WAMC.org/roundtable and go to 1230-14 panel and click there.
But I just want to mention that if that's too complicated, just write to us at at roundtable at WAMC.org, because I want to hear from Joe. I'd love to hear from people who have not written before, who have something to say. That's just simple.
I checked this morning. Someone did write yesterday on the page saying they were so happy that you were back, Alan. I'm not lying. Actually, somebody wrote that.
How was your vacation, Alan? I approached that with disbelief.
Well, we heard yesterday, so you didn't listen, obviously.
I have a job.
I think I do, too.
And a fine job you do.
And it's a good thing I have a paying job, another job.
All right.
Yes.
Are we done on State? We're good on that? All right. The tragic situation of the AirAsia flight has some bit of closure in that the plane debris and bodies have been located somewhere around 2:45, 3:15 this morning, Eastern Time. Reports came in that the site had been found, what appeared to be both bodies and debris from the AirAsia plane that vanished less than an hour after taking off from the airport on Sunday. A senior official with Indonesia's transportation ministry confirmed that the debris was from Flight 8501, which was carrying 162 people when it disappeared. We've confirmed the wreckage was from the body of the plane, he said in Jakarta. Members of search teams told the Indonesian news media that they had spotted what appeared to be suitcases, life vests, and aircraft debris. Indonesian television showed a rescuer descending from a helicopter toward corpses floating in the sea, and interestingly, and other than that, not very far from where the original search site was, from my understanding.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing that there's some comfort, I guess is probably a bad word, to know that it was a terrible accident, but they're on to it. They found it. you know, they've identified a storm as likely being, you know, bad weather is likely being a contributing factor. There's some finger pointing about whether they were allowed to change course. But they at least these families, and boy, it's small consolation, anybody who's just lost loved ones. But at least these families are not left so empty as the families from the Malaysian Flight 370, which just disappeared and they still haven't found.
Because I mean, because I read something and I'm confused about this. I know it was an Indonesian air flight, but what was the connection to the Malaysian planes? Do you have any idea?
Well, it's all from the same vicinity, and
no, I think there was something more.
Do you mean by the corporate standard?
Yeah.
Well, this was AirAsia. It was a different airline. Yeah.
But one of the things that really confuses me here is that if these things keep happening with a Malaysian connection, right, isn't somebody going to say maybe there's something else afoot here?
Well, this is the third, I think,
yeah,
crash, and as not in as many months, but within the year. And I thought that, too. I was wondering, is there, A, in the more esoteric, weird, a new Bermuda Triangle, or B, is there something going on where somebody's sabotaging planes or...
Well, just to clarify, the first airline was shot down over Ukraine. That was certainly an act of,
yes,
you know, the result of the war that was going on, the civil war that was going on in Ukraine. You know, there's finger pointing about who was responsible, mm-hmm, for that, but I think most people believe it was Russian missile, anti-missile launchers. But the second is the mysterious Flight 370 that nobody has found, that went off course, that took basically a left turn and went off into the ocean direction and was never heard from again. And that was a bizarre mystery that may or may never be solved. And this is a terrible tragedy involving bad weather and a flight that encountered problems and appears to be, you know, I don't want to say just that to minimize it, but they seem to be three distinctly different things, mm-hmm, that involve flying over the Indian Ocean.
We're going to take a break there. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll be back to continue our conversation after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue here with Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. We love having you part of our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org or WAMC.org/roundtable. And we will get to those letters in a few moments. We're going to move on to a few. Or do you want to do the few that we have now? Or do you want to wait?
No, my problem is I don't see them.
Okay, then let's wait.
Oh, now I do. Sure.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, and yes, Margaret says we need them. No, that's not her. Margaret says ethics has to be looked in all forms of government in New York State. Too many times we see cronyism, big money causing people in charge to do illegal things. And if you eliminate nepotism, create an equal election day for all, people like Silver and Joe Bruno will disappear. Gerrymandering created them as well as they're creating gerrymandering, I would add.
And as long as we don't have public financing, people without money are not going to be able to run and win.
Irene says, can these accidents involving planes be negated? 3 question marks. You would think such travel would be safer today. Well, it's actually pretty safe.
It is safe. Overall.
Yes, much safer than riding in a car, that's for sure.
16,000 people are in the air at any given time, according to a recent NPR report. And that's in the U.S., over the U.S. So that's how much we fly and without, mm-hmm, incident.
And Rich says we need a Moreland Commission with teeth. Members of the New York State Senate and Assembly getting retirement benefits while getting their paychecks. Members having outside jobs, which we don't know about. Cronyism, nepotism must be wiped out in New York State. It can happen. We need a political campaign where both sides have an equal chance. Bill Larkin signs this past season, we're bigger than life. Money, money, money. And that's from Rich. That's what I got.
All right. Let's move on to some other topics. The number 3 Republican in the House apparently addressed a group of white supremacists and neo-Nazis in 2002. Representative Steve, is it Scalise or Scalise?
I think it's Scalise.
Of Louisiana, the number 3 Republican in the House addressed a group He confirmed this on Monday as his party prepared to take control of both chambers of Congress. He made his remarks to the European American Unity and Rights Organization, which was founded 2 years earlier by David Duke, the former Ku Klux Klan leader and Louisiana politician. Mr. Scalise was a Louisiana state's legislator at the time. The Southern Poverty Law Center has described the organization, which uses EURO as an acronym, as a hate group, while noting that in recent years it has accomplished little and serves, quote, primarily as a vehicle to publicize Duke's writings and sell his books.
Well, this, you know, this is, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that one of the rising stars in the Republican Party is a racist.
Well, rising
it's star. Their stock and trade.
Sure.
These days, that's what they are. That's what they do. And I'm sorry if I offend anybody, but you know, and I've said this before, the reason why these people disrespect the president as much as they do and show him and have totally tried to undermine him from the GOP, which is they think is God's own party, is because he's black. And this guy goes and speaks in front of a former KKK organization. You know, this is the underbelly of the Republican Party. And this is not and this is what they stand for these days.
Now, Libby, here's the point.
Yes, dear.
You can get. No, I'm not going to argue with you, but
okay.
You can get a.
that's no fun.
Right.
You can get an aberrant legislator. You got 435 people sitting mm-hmm. in the House of Representatives.
Sure.
And you can get one of these guys who just, you know, look. It was David Duke's district. He wanted that. No. He wanted that vote. However, what's important about this story, and which we should never lose sight of, is this guy's going to be, the third-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives.
And
that is what this is all about. Is this what you want?
And let's see if Boehner does anything, if Boehner takes it away or not.
Can he say anything that would mitigate this at this point?
No.
And his spokesperson is saying that he has never been affiliated with the abhorrent group in question and chalks it up to ignorance. There's no transcript available, but some blog posts from back then said that he had a productive conversation about ways to oversee gross mismanagement of tax revenue or slush funds that have little or no accountability.
Look,
and that go to which are apparent giveaways to a selective group based on race.
Hmm.
So
look, every once in a while, a good politician will go and argue with people that they don't agree with. I don't think that's what was happening here.
No, I don't think that's what was happening here. And I think you'll see more and more of this coming to light. I think that these folks, their stock and trade these days, as I said before, is using race as a way to divide the country and to win elections. And we've seen it more and more.
I get concerned, though, of painting it with that broad of a brush.
Well, you know, sorry. I hate to be Debbie Downer here for you, but
I think there is a big difference as Alan noted, a big difference between someone who has a conservative ideology and someone who is going to side with the Ku Klux Klan.
I wish that you were right. We have to remember that, you know, a lot of us, I read this in an article this morning, a lot of us thought that the radical Christian right was born out of the Roe v. Wade decision. It actually was born out of segregation in the South and the push against the civil rights movement.
Well, you know, you have a point, because when Lyndon Johnson did his great "We Shall Overcome" speech? He said, "I've lost the South now."
Yes, right.
Forever.
Right, right. And that's when the South started to vote
Republican.
Well,
let's not paint the entire South with this kind of broad brush. There's a lot of enlightenment in the South, and there's recognition of its past, and there's many people have come and disavowed that, but there are remnants that go back all the way to the post-Civil War era that unfortunately, evidently, are still there.
Well, but it's a red section of the country,
mm-hmm.
right? And it is. You know, although
it's
I have
becoming
to say,
purple in the, you know,
in the
Georgia
urban
will
areas,
be a purple state and eventually a blue state.
As more and more people of color register to vote and actually vote, then yes, that will happen.
Let me just agree with Joe about painting Republicans with a broad brush. You know, when I left the west side of Manhattan to go at Rutgers at the Eagleton Institute to do my Wisconsin book on the Wisconsin legislature, I have to tell you, I had to sit day after day after day with the very powerful Republicans there. And they were very decent people. I liked them very much. Now, things, it's a long way.
That was a long time ago.
Yes, it was. It's a long time from then to now.
Right.
But I have to say, they were very decent people. They really cared.
And look, I've worked for Republicans. Yeah. And, you know, on individually, some of these folks, you know.
This is starting to sound like I actually have friends who are Republicans.
I have friends who are Republicans. It's true. You know, and on occasion, I have worked for, and I worked for a Republican.
And they're not all that bad.
This cycle. You know, but the South, the U.S. Congress, that brand of Republican Party, the GOP, you know, they make a big deal out of the president playing golf. They make the big deal about the president going on vacation. They undermine everything he tries to do. They undermine
not
him
playing golf,
as a person.
Screwing up a wedding.
Or a wedding. Okay. And they weren't even upset about it because they got a better view. I saw the clip last night on the news. The couple got a better view. And besides, he's the commander-in-chief, so what are you going to do? And he called to say congratulations.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, there is this sense, this rising racism within the national GOP.
Is it automatically racism when a conservative Republican criticizes Obama for some political faux pas? It isn't always.
I mean, maybe motivated by that, in some cases, but I
just think that's too broad a brush.
I think, but you need to look at the roots. The roots of the Tea Party.
But a lot of Republicans disavow the Tea Party.
I get that, Mike, but they don't necessarily disavow some of the rhetoric.
But what about Mike's point about we certainly saw, and you talk about a product of the South, we certainly saw much of the same criticism leveled against an impeached president, Clinton.
I don't know if anybody, I think people were on behind them,
a vast right wing conspiracy, Libby.
Oh, well,
and she was right about that, of course.
Right, she was right about that. But I think, you know, oh wow, he's getting some in the White House. I think a lot of the guys were like, saying,
so what?
Wow, I wish it was me.
Oh, there was
sort of stuff.
Yeah, but what about? Okay,
you know, I don't see it as the same thing.
Well,
you
the letters are coming in, and they all agree
with
you.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they do. James says...
No, I feel totally vindicated.
James says, I agree with Libby. Point and Mark, they in quotes, are just trying to cause division so they can grow in power, make money for themselves. They didn't give a hoot for the people in this country. And somebody who's unsigned, of course. Question, if we went back in each of your history, might we find something objectionable? Can you spell hypocritical? Come on, get over yourselves. Anyway.
I don't want to go back in my history. That's for sure.
We all have things we're ashamed of. That's all. That's for sure. Well, but you have the 13 new GOP Congress people, a group of them, have all signed on to take away food stamps and food
or
subsidies.
Or access to the election polls,
right.
which gets to your point,
yes.
I think, Libby.
These are troubling trends, but you have to understand that there's many, many great Americans, great statesmen who were not Democrats.
I don't know if there are any statesmen anymore. I mean, I think
anymore.
That's,
yeah,
I think that's the problem.
There's probably fewer.
The way campaigns run, there's not enough public finance. Financing, the oligarchs are getting elected here. I mean, it's, you know, corporations are people. You know, the little guy, Mr. Smith, can no longer go to Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, Henry says, it may be uncomfortable to say out loud, but I agree with Libby. I believe that for some Republicans, there is definitely a racist undertone in their opposition to the president, and that is from Henry. And regular correspondent Luca says, Libby is absolutely correct. Actions point to the underlying mindset, and that's from Luca. And the front porch in Copaig, New York, says the soup special today is chicken corn chowder.
Ooh. That was yesterday.
No, I don't think so.
No,
you had it left over.
Corn chowder.
I think yesterday? It was something different yesterday.
It's always better the second.
Yeah.
It's true. As long as they put in the refrigerator and take it back out, or put it outside.
And Jim says, regarding Libby's comment, read the racist base of the Republican Party. Amen in capital letters, and that's from Jim. There we go.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll We'll have more stories and we'll show more love to Libby. It'll be great.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Support comes from Third Eye Associates Limited, holistic life planning, transition planning, and wealth management, registered investment advisors, New York City, Washington, D.C., and the Hudson Valley, thirdeyeassociates.com. Lennox Plastic Surgery and Skin Center of BMC, plastic, reconstructive, and hand surgery, and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santamarina, berkshirehealthsystems.org. And Mother Earth Storehouse, nutrition educators on staff to help customers make healthy lifestyle choices, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and natural food since 1978. MotherEarthStorehouse.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel and our about 10 minutes left, and we want to get to a couple of topics here. We welcome your comments, roundtable at wamc.org. You know, we didn't mention this yesterday, but because we were talking about the airliner, the downed airliner, but as that was happening, there was burning ferry Italy, and what a horrible story that was. Just a tragic story. And it's unbelievable there were not more fatalities than there were.
Well, we don't know how many there were.
At least 10 that we know of. And you're right. But it's, oh my God. And that went on for so long. 427 people on that ferry. And black smoke gushing from the lower decks. Both Italian and Greek fireboats were blasting water at the flames, and helicopters were trying to rescue the passengers, who were obviously desperate. One of the big things is because the metal floors are so hot, and they're burning their feet, and they have nowhere to go to alleviate that.
Yeah.
It was a horrible story.
It was, but the good part of the story, if there is a good part of it, is that they saved an awful lot of lives.
They sure did.
But I have to say that there's a big difference between what the manifest said and the number of people who were saved. So we have to assume that there's a real possibility that an awful lot of people, are going to be found to have died in this thing that we didn't know about.
The other troubling part of this report was that people reported that, you know, that whole notion of men, women, and of women and children first and the elderly first was being completely thrown out, and aggressive men were pushing women and children aside to get to the helicopters. And it just sounded like a complete pandemonium, exacerbated by the fact that it was so terribly painful to be standing where they were, as you described, Joe. So it just must have been horrific.
And the emergency preparations and the response of the crew is coming under question.
It always does.
Well, yes, and because there is disorganization, and I don't know how you can have an organized horror scene.
Organized chaos.
Chaos, right. but there, it didn't seem like there were the...
Well, I have to say the Italian authorities have already opened up a criminal investigation.
Yes.
You know, they had their taste of this a few years ago when that big cruise ship capsized.
Oversized.
You know, and I watched a clip of a mother holding on to two kids. One was a baby being lifted up in the basket onto a helicopter. It's rough seas. You know, the people who are doing the rescue really need to, you know, be given kudos for doing what they're doing. And
evidently, the seas were just terrible. Yeah, I mean, the conditions were just
terrible.
And the
captain stayed with the ship this time.
Yes.
I think if there's one lesson that was learned.
Yeah, right. But there was also
Costa Concordia. Right, yes.
Last year, last night on the news, they said that this boat was cited for fire concerns in the past. And so
there'll be an inquest that will show they were not prepared to handle the emergency, and perhaps maybe the next time authorities will make the next ships be more, you know, suited for this kind of tragedy before it happens.
Well, so we move on to that story. Now, the last thing we want to talk about is the end of the war in Afghanistan. If you know what we make of that, there was a lot of symbolism, a lot of official work being done on Sunday and Monday to quote unquote end the war in Afghanistan. But obviously a lot of questions and what was accomplished and what still is the situation there. I think the article that I sent out to the group was the Taliban citing?
I love that.
That they won. they declared defeat of U.S. allies in Afghanistan.
It wasn't the first foreign soldiers to be in Afghanistan and then leave Afghanistan without
Indeed.
A clear victory. I think it goes back to centuries that, the British, even the Russians in 1979 invaded Afghanistan or 1980. And, you know, it's a very difficult place to try to take control. My big regret is had we never made that foolish war in Iraq, and the U.S. had focused on rebuilding Afghanistan and left the resources intact there, perhaps it'd be a different situation now.
The real question is, of course, there's still 10,000 troops of ours there.
13,000. Mostly
American. And those people are at risk, that's for sure. I've always wondered if, in fact, you withdraw your troops, whether the people who were there have the gumption to say, okay, no matter what we have to do, we have to defeat these people. Otherwise, they're going to kill us, or they're going to kill some of us. Once the Americans come in and say, let us do this for you, you know that isn't going to happen.
Well, what's the future look like for Afghanistan, Alan? I mean,
it ain't good.
You know,
it ain't good. The Taliban isn't going away. I still think this is going to just continue on the way it has, as you just indicated, for centuries.
But won't we always have a stake? I mean, we'll always have to have some part, right, to protect?
Well, I mean, how do you tell the American people we're going to let women get whipped in the streets? We're going to
be raped.
And raped and this and that. Do we have the stuff to be able to say, well, that's their problem over there?
Is it possible for Afghanistan to emerge as a tolerant society, to take something from what's happened in the last, longer than just the U.S. incursion into Afghanistan in October of 2001, but back for the past several decades? Is it possible to emerge with some lesson about respecting others and tolerance? It doesn't seem like it's heading that way, does it? Yeah.
It's not part of the narrative for ISIS or ISIL or the Taliban. You know, when you have incidents going on in Europe where you have some Islamic extremists are saying women walking on the street is an affront to their religious freedom. You know, we have a real problem here. And, this guy, the new guy in Afghanistan, Ashraf Ghani, seems to be a little stronger in terms of being a leader than
he doesn't
the other
seem
guy.
To be as corrupt
as
Karzai.
Yeah, he doesn't, as Karzai. And and he really wants to keep government control of the territory. On the way in this morning, I heard that in Iraq, they recaptured a city from the Islamic State. This is the long haul. I mean, the part of the problem here is, and people have been talking about this, the Islamic State, the Taliban, isn't what Islam is all about. And so it's about winning back the hearts and minds of people to recognize what Islam really is about. And it's not about just abject killing of people and taking over. But that's going to take a very, very long time. But it's one of the things that people have been talking about.
I want to thank everyone who wrote in, and we welcome your letters still, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also go to our webpage, wamc.org/roundtable, and we would love to hear from you. My thanks to Libby, Mike, and Alan. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk tomorrow. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.